time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down. Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do Trap Supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to deer camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA.
this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Well, hello everybody, this is Clint Locklear. It is a beautiful April day. About 70 degrees. I'm already getting stuff out of the garden, and we're going to talk about something that is not so beautiful and not so fun today, and that's what we do with some of our equipment at the end of the year. Now, this may not be that sexy of a topic, but I promise you it's one of those things that if you don't do it, it's going to cost you a ton of money over a long term, because if you don't take care of your equipment, you're going to get screwed up. Now, I'm going to go into different dyes and dips and waxes, and it's an old technique called a cleaning barrel. I've got some friends. I played with one time. It's pretty neat. Powder coating snares, what you do with your lure and bait, fish oils and urine and stuff like that, and your other equipment at the end of the year. And the reason all this is so important, from a business point of view, when you buy something, it's considered an asset. When you have that asset, sure, it's depreciating. The longer you can keep that asset in working order, the more money you can make, because you're allowed to write it off, and then you get to still produce income with it. Another thing is, you don't want to get all excited about trapping season, go out to your shop and realize you've got stuff rusted shut, nuts and bolts aren't working, springs are weak. Everything like that that can happen and does happen to trappers, and it's happened to me, where you get all excited to go set traps and you realize you dropped the ball on some of your maintenance and it didn't really go as planned. So, like I said, not the most sexiest topic, but it is one I get a lot of questions on. It's one, you know, that people are really confused. Now, I'm not going to tell you any one of these is better or worse than the other one. Only thing I can do is talk about my personal experience with them, what I've noticed, what I've talked to some other guys that are very proficient trappers, kind of their mindset about it, some things that I've picked up along the way, because everybody that's listening to this has a different trap line. They got a different set of environments, you know, just a lot of different things you got to think about. Like, for instance, if you don't think environment makes a big difference, years ago, I would use nothing but cam lock locks for my snares. And they're great locks. They function well. You put teeth on them. You put choke springs on them. They're very versatile. They do exactly what they're supposed to do. Great, great piece of equipment. But what I found out on one trip going down to Louisiana, the humidity was so high and the silt was so much in the water that if I was using cam locks, all of a sudden, after about 2 days, my snares would not work anymore. It's like the lock was rusted shut. And it wasn't rusted shut. It just couldn't flow the right way. Now, if you're out in Montana or Wyoming or California or maybe in the Northeast, I don't know. See, that's the difference of a piece of equipment and maybe the way you want to treat that piece of equipment, as far as how you're going to go about doing that, because everybody that's listening to this has different things they got to listen to. So when you hear a show like this, don't take it you're supposed to do A, B, and C. Listen to what I'm saying. All I can do is give you the advice that I've observed over many years of doing this, and hopefully it helps you out. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is why we want to do some of this. Maintenance on your equipment. And I'm not the best person to do this, because right now I am being haunted by 3 pallets of traps that are out in my backyard right now that Monday I get to start dyeing them all. And you know, like I said, everybody does something a little different. Now, some of these traps have been dyed full metal jacket, painted full metal jacket, just dyed. I mean, it's just a hodgepodge of stuff. Because when I start the season early and I'm ending up, you know, in the end of March, that's a long time for equipment to be running. And I can promise you one thing, I do not take equipment out of the field to make sure it looks pretty. It is a working piece of equipment for me, nothing more. It is not something that I rub on and just want it to look a certain way. I understand there's a lot of guys, when it comes to the maintenance of their traps, they get really wound tight about it. They're really, really worried about scent control, a lot of different things like that, and it doesn't really matter. But if you're that type of person where it does matter to you, well then, you know, knock yourself out as far as I'm concerned. But that's not my way, and I'm not going to pretend that it's my way. My stuff will start the season looking decent, and if you look at it now, it's something you'd have a hard time being sold at a convention on a table on a tailgater spot, because it is all in really, really rough shape. I can take any of those pieces of equipment out right now, and I can catch coyotes with them. Makes no difference to the coyotes. But what it does make a difference is my bottom line over a long period of time. And that's the reason I personally do maintenance the way that I do. Now, my routine of maintenance, it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. I'm going to go over that before we get into different ways that you can treat your traps. Most of the time, like this year, I don't do this every year because I don't have to do this every year because I'm using Full Metal Jacket. I will take all the traps that I've used this year or has been abused, and they don't look in the best physical shape. And what I'm looking at more than the jaws or the levers, I'm looking at the springs. The springs are very expensive if you go to replace several hundred of them, not just in the cost of the springs, but the labor and time, and not be able to use that time on something productive somewhere else. So by doing the maintenance, I'm not having a downtime where I shouldn't have a downtime piddling with traps. So my normal thing is every 2 years, which is what this year's is, I take, I don't know how many traps is out there right now. There's three pallets that are about 3 foot high, CDRs and all kind of different traps. And I've got all my dog proofs, and I've got my body grip traps and, you know, my snare supports and all that that are going to be over the next week and a half are going to be dyed. Now, you may be thinking, well, Clint says you don't have to dye if you're using Full Metal Jacket. And that is absolutely true. But the reason I do that, if I go to do a control job and the traps look really, really bad, there's enough people out there with enough misinformation that they think if the traps don't look decent, that obviously I don't know what I'm talking about, or I don't know how to perform the task that they're hiring me to do. So when I make sure they look somewhat pretty, it has nothing to do with the animals. It has everything to do with clients and misconceptions that those clients may have. Because first impressions, when you show somebody a trap or they've seen you set a trap, if they automatically go into, well, he can't catch nothing there because there's a little bit of rust on the jaws, you've already kind of lost ground with that relationship. So every 2 years, I dye all the traps. Or most of the traps, like, you know, I didn't use a lot of muskrats and long springs, stuff like that this year, so I don't have to worry about those. But my coyote traps and bobcat traps and fox traps and coon traps and beaver traps and otter traps and snare supports and kill poles and tools and all that type stuff, all that's going to go through this cycle this week. And normally what I do, because being self-employed, I can start the water in the morning. In about every hour or so, I'm taking traps out, putting new traps in, and I repeat this process for about a week. That's about how long for me to run from usually daylight, somewhere around there, till a little after dark. And I just repeat this process every day. So I get all these traps that look all nice and pretty. And then in between that, I've got a 5 gallon bucket of Full Metal Jacket. Once they sit out and they dry for a couple of days, and I know there's no moisture in there, I'm dipping them in the Full Metal Jacket, and they go back into the cutoff 55-gallon drums or the bins or whatever it is that piece of equipment goes into. And that lasts me, honestly, about 2 years. Between the dye and between the Full Metal Jacket, I don't have much to deal with for about 2 years. It's a big mess when I do it every year or every other year, but I could do it every year, but it doesn't really need it with a Full Metal Jacket. And we're going to go into that a little bit different. That's my normal way of doing it. Now, during the year, if I get traps, because I get into certain places that have very acidic soil, and, you know, especially if you get in around swamps and places where they've got a lot of pine trees and red clay and stuff like that, that can rust a trap really, really bad. So if I'm on the road, my normal thing, when I get a trap that's in bad shape, I'll just always have a wire brush with me. I'll sit there and I'll knock all the rust off that I can. I don't get too crazy with it. I knock all that down and I will spray paint it. Now, what kind of spray paint do I use? I don't think it really matters. For the most part, it's just Rust-Oleum. I don't care what color it is. It can be gold, silver, black, brown, green. A lot of mine are green just from military. I'm comfortable with that color. I paint them. I go ahead and use them at the end of the year. If it's the year that I'm dying, they'll get dyed then. I don't worry about taking the paint off. Makes no difference. And then I'll dip them in Full Metal Jacket. We're going to go into some of the paint. And if you're on a smaller scale with equipment, paint to me is with that and Full Metal Jacket, it's kind of like the king combo. And I'll talk about that. So that's kind of what I'm doing on my personal equipment. You know, the only other thing that I'm going to do is if I've got body grips that are getting in rough shape, I will go ahead and put them in the trapping die because it'll help control that rust. And then I will take those out and I'll pick a good hot day and I'll take four or five different colors of spray paint. You know, be OD green, some browns, some tans, some different things like that. And I'll spread them all out on a palette and I'll spend about 15 seconds with each color. And I will just hit them with a bunch of different places just to break the outline of that body grip trap. Let them dry, flip them over, do it again. Let them dry for a couple days and they go in a Full Metal Jacket. Most of the body grip traps that I'm, then that's for dry land now. Most of the body grip traps that are used for water, they get the dye if they're really bad. If not, they just get painted. I don't put my water body grip traps in Full Metal Jacket because it gets too slick, so you don't want to do that, and it kind of gets an opaque white color. Just has something to do with the hardener in there. So my water traps don't get Full Metal Jacket. All my 220s and stuff for raccoons and dry land otter and stuff, they get the Full Metal Jacket. And that's kind of what I do. It's not very complicated. It's just monotonous because of the volume of equipment. And it, like I said, it takes me about a week to do that. So that's what I'm doing. But I want to go over some of these different things. Now, the kind of tried and true. Now, before we get into that, I want to bring up a point. When I was in Alaska, and you would come across somebody's registered trap line, their traps within 100 yards of the road would be hanging in a tree. No one ever messed with them. Alaska's a different place than it is down here. Most tourists don't go that far into the woods. And they would just hang all of their traps. And they would stay there all year. Now, some of the guys would say they didn't want to bring it in, have any human scent or modern scent on them. But let me tell you, the traps that these guys were using in Alaska, back when I was up there, that were hanging in the trees all year long, were rusted. And most of them were using jump traps for marten. They would use jump traps for a lot of the lynx and fox. They were using long springs, coil springs because of the compactness and the weightness, and a lot of them are on snow machines. I don't know if that's taken off, except for the wolf traps in Alaska now or not. But at the time, they were using very just sloppily built traps. I mean, a number two Victor, as long as you can open the jaws, you can set the trap. And the odor of the rust, and that's kind of the point that I want to get across from this, the odor of the rust did not keep them from catching anything in Alaska. Now, some of them would boil them in hemlock bushes every now and then. Then they would set it right back on the tree. They didn't wax them. They're going to rust again. That's the way they did it. And then you're talking wolves and fox and lynx. It didn't make any difference to them. The reason I think it's important, like I said before, is for maintenance and so it doesn't cost me more money down the road. You really got to mess up a long spring and let it pit really, really, really bad. And their summer weather is so short in Alaska that it's not like it is in most parts of the lower 48. So they didn't have a whole lot of time to rust. And believe it or not, especially where I was at in the interior Fairbanks, it's a desert environment, so it's very dry. So if you're in Arizona, you could leave your traps out all year long. You're going to get a little bit of surface rust. It would take you a decade or more of doing that before you had any problems with any springs. You try that in Tennessee or Georgia or Louisiana, you're going to be doing good to get 2 years out of the traps. So maintenance is the key. Another thing that I want to talk about is if you're doing this because you think you've got to hide your scent or the metal scent from a coyote or a fox, you're overanalyzing something and I think that you're kind of, see, what's the right way to put this? You're leaving yourself for an opening. If something didn't go right, you have something to blame. And I don't think that's very healthy. A coyote is not afraid of metal. A red fox is not afraid of metal. And I've caught a lot of coyotes that's come off a beaver line and they smell like castor. Still catch coyotes with them. You know, I don't on purpose try to mess the trap up with a bunch of lure and bait and stuff on it, then go try to catch something with it. But a majority of the animals you'll not have any problems with. And to make this point even more, that trap maintenance is about maintenance and not about animals, I've been playing with the portable pockets down now this whole year. And we figured out how to nail coyotes with these portable pockets. Now, if you think a coyote is scared of steel or the odor of metal, we're putting our bait and lure inside a metal pipe. So it is enclosed in metal. And that coyote is still working that bait and lure. It's above ground. So keep that in mind if you get on this tirade that you've got to have such a perfectly clean trap. If this is what turns you on and you got a fetish for it, knock yourself out. If you're thinking it's for the animals, don't be so anal about it because the animal doesn't care. So let's go ahead and start. I've got a list kind of here that I want to go through. One is dye. You've got two kinds of dye. You've got kind of like the man-made, the black and the dye crystals that we buy from a trap supply dealer. Guys, I'm telling you, what I bought 10 years ago is not being sold today. If it is, I don't know where it's at. The stuff that we're buying now is it does turn your traps black. It does have a strong odor to it. There's no way to get around it. And it's not like the trap dye that if you're my age that you put on traps 10, 15, 20 years ago. I don't know exactly what that was, and I'm not exactly sure what this is. I do know both of them are byproducts of another industry, but this is greatly different than it was 15 years ago. And I don't remember the older stuff having the odor, because when you take a dyed trap and you set it out, there's no question that it's got a lot of odor coming off of that trap. So let's make that clear that there is a difference between what you read about in the old magazines and books and what you're using today. But that's what we have today, so we can deal with it. The other part of that is using something that is natural. If you're worried about scent control, I would advise you to go with something that's natural. Now, most of the time when you're using a natural product, whether it be hemlock leaves or sage or cedar or black walnuts, and I'm sure there's a lot of other that are in certain areas of plants that I'm not sure about, but those particular things are very acidic and they do have natural dyes in them. When I dye stuff from my black walnut tree, it doesn't turn a solid black or solid brown color. It turns more of a bluish black color and kind of with a little bit of green tint in there. But it smells like the husk, which is a lot more natural than what we buy from a supply dealer. If you don't have black walnuts, you know, anything that's an evergreen like a cedar or a hemlock, your Christmas tree, I don't care what it is, anything like that, those type plants have enough acidity and they have enough natural dye in them that you can actually dye your traps in them. And it does a pretty good job. It'll actually eat off the metal. And the premise of it is really, really simple. If you've never done it before, or you've made it more complicated than it is, you take a barrel. I get the wash tubs, not wash tubs, but the the water tubs that I can get at Tractor Supply or somewhere like that. I don't know how many gallons it is. It's probably 3 feet across and it's 14 inches deep. I set it on my turkey cooker, which is propane. I fill it about 3/4 up with water. I let the water get hot, then I pour the dye crystals in there if I'm using the dye crystals. If I'm using a natural product, I put it in there to begin with. Then when it gets to a rolling boil, I'll kind of fish that stuff out if I'm using walnut hulls or something like that, because it'll start sticking in a lot of weird places and doing some weird things. So I'll just take like a kind of a strainer and I'll strain a lot of that out. If I'm using branches, it's really easy because you can pull them out. All that works great. It'll work for snares, it'll work for traps, it'll work for body grips, it'll work for dog proofs. About anything metal, all you're doing is using acidic base to eat some of the rust and corrosion, and then the natural dyes in there give that somewhat of a color. But it's not going to take a trap that's got 6 inches of rust on it and make it look brand new. You're going to have rust clumps and stuff like that on there. But that's all that is that natural dye. Or the regular trap dye. You let them boil for 45 minutes to an hour. You know, they don't have to be rolling, boiling. They pretty much just simmer. When I put the traps in there, it drops the temperature. In about 20 minutes, it's kind of bubbling again. I come back, I fish them out, I set them over on a pallet. I don't even worry about rinsing them off personally, but you can do that. I set them over there, I grab the other stuff that needs to be in there, I put them in the barrel, and go about my business for about an hour. It's a very simple process. Some people put nails in the jaws to be able to do that. I don't. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, except I just know when I get in a big hot hurry, I'm going to start pulling those traps off, and I'm going to have nails either in my yard or in a farmer's field or on a road or something like that, and it's going to cost me later. I personally don't put those in there, but you can, and I can understand why someone wants to do that. Now, every couple of years, there's this great big thing that goes around the internet. And to me, this is insanity, but if you want to do it, knock yourself out. There's a big thing where everybody tries to make everything more complicated than it is, and you boil your traps with them set. Now, my question for that is, either they don't have a lot of traps they're putting in the barrel, or they're only putting the one or two layers in there, and they're doing it really gently. But you start putting a lot of traps in a barrel, and they're set. One goes off, the next one goes off. You've got one big mess you're trying to take apart when they start snapping closed. Now, you could wire them open, I guess, if you wanted to, but my question is why? And that becomes a big topic every couple of years on the internet. I mean, it's almost like a fad, you know, and then people get upset and say you ain't doing it right if you don't do that. It doesn't matter, guys. It really doesn't matter. You're just trying to get the rust and stuff off your traps. And that's all it is, using a natural dye. Now, the dips that's been on the market, and I'm going to start with the gas dip. Now, if you've used gas dip, which I've used a lot on body grip traps and different things like that, I think that's a better place for them personally. Even though I say I don't think odor has a whole lot to do, I think gas smells on a trap, from my personal experience, has caused me some issues. Because I remember when I first got, and I don't remember the brand, of one of the gas speed dips, I dipped all my traps in there, and I went out and I set a bunch of coyote traps, and I've never seen the digging, which I'm not used to seeing, as I did at that point. Now, the only difference that I made wasn't my sets or my lure, it was dipping that trap. And I think a lot of it has to do more with raccoons than coyotes, or definitely not bobcats. But for some reason, that caused me some issues. Now, if you're going to do that, you can get really creative with gas dips. I know a lot of guys out west that use a lot of gas dips. They run a lot of traps, and their environment is very different than it is here in the east. If you're in, say, West Texas, and you speed dip 500 or 600 coyote and bobcat traps in May, and you let them things cook out in that sun or under a shade where it's going to be 115 degrees for most of the summer, you're going to have something that's going to be pretty dry. Now, where I live and where a lot of y'all live, the humidity never allows that stuff to dry out. And when moisture comes in contact with that through humidity, especially on the gas dips, in my personal experience, all of a sudden something that seems dry gets really tacky and it gets really smelling like gas. Now, there's guys that use Coleman fuel, and I have no doubt that you could get really creative with this and go talk to someone that paints cars, and they have a lot of the stuff on the car paint that's very expensive chemicals, but it would dilute the gas dips, and it would be so volatile that it would burn off, and you probably wouldn't have that issue. Now, there's certain dips, if you're going to go with the gas dips, I would really recommend buying one of every kind that you can get. Just pick you up one of the smallest containers you can from a convention or something like that. Have a few old traps, dip the individual traps, have them marked somehow, and then that way you can see what it is. And the reason I'm telling you that is certain dips dry harder than other dips. I've handled people's dip traps before, even in the winter time. I mean, your gloves stick to them, and it just reeks of petroleum. And they catch stuff with it. So I'm not saying you can't catch anything with it. I don't want to smell all that myself. I don't want to have that with me on me all the time. I don't want it on my gloves. I don't want it on my clothes. I don't want all that. Not so much for the animals, but I don't want it because I don't want it on me. So if you try these different ones and you ask the person that's making them, find out who's making this dip, whether it be Kyle Katz or Andy Stoles, or I'm not sure if Blackie's still making his or not, but you have these different dips. Ask them, what is the best way where it doesn't soften up and it doesn't smell like gas? The person that's selling that product ought to be able to tell you something. If they just say, use gas and don't worry about it, try gas and don't worry about it, but test it against other stuffs, and you're probably not going to be happy with it. But it's totally up to you. It's like, this is one of those things that's really, really big on the environment. Now, on body grip traps, I've used gas dips on body grip traps, and it does great. You know, it does. It's quick. It's simple. As long as you don't let your traps get in really, really bad shape before, where you have flowering or rust, which I'm getting ready to talk about, it's something that you know, water doesn't mess with it. It makes them look good. It gives you a good surface. If it is a kind that gets sticky, though, and that's the reason you need to test them, if it's a kind that gets sticky, no matter what the bottle says, but in real life, if it gets sticky, and that comes down on an otter or a beaver, you're going to be tearing hair off that animal to get it off. Especially when it becomes, if you're somewhere, you know, like when I was out in Iowa coon trapping, road line trapping, I had a bunch of Reds 280s when they were legal at the time. If that would have been sticky, it was 75 and 80 degrees when season opened. Now, if that was sticky and started closing on those coons, I'm going to be pulling guard hairs off those animals. That just makes common sense to me that that's what's going to happen. Underwater, with the silt and everything like that, that normally is not the problem, but it's just something to keep in mind. You know, everything you do is just like Johnny Thorpe always says, you got pluses and you got minuses, so you got to think this stuff through. Now, Newt Sterling has got a water-based dip. I've used it. I like it. I really like it on body grip traps. I'm not crazy about either one of the dips, honestly, when it comes to foothold traps, unless they're long springs. And the reason is, and it doesn't matter if it's a water base or a gas base, what that does is put a coating around that trap that is still somewhat porous. Now, when you have metal and you have high humidity and you have water, and they can come in contact, you're going to start getting rust. Now, one of the my experiences was having them on foothold traps. If it's a long spring and it's really loose and it's really sloppy, you know, and the way the dogs work and everything like that, especially the old long springs, you're not going to have any trouble whatsoever. But if you start getting into, like I had a bunch of MB750s at one time that have that little bitty nut and bolt that you do your pan tension with, that would flower with rust underneath the dip. And the problem with the flowering of rust underneath some of these dips is you can't see it. If you can't see it, you don't know it's there. So the next year you re-dip it, the trap looks great to you. Underneath that, you're growing rust. And what I had a huge problem with for about 2 years is a lot of these MB750s, nothing wrong with a trap, it was my fault. By not getting rid of that original dip to see what was going on, it literally rusted through the nut and bolt pattern. And when I would try to tighten it or loosen it, the nuts would and bolts would just break. I mean, it did a great job on protecting the springs and the jaws and everything else. But the more complicated something is, the more precise something is, sometimes the dips are just not suited very much for that. You know, like I would say a dip on something like an MB550, because the way that trap is made, you're not going to have any issues. I would not want to be trying that on an MB650. On the new Bridger number 3 Dogless, don't know, but I'm not going to be using it anyway. But just taking consideration what I'm telling you, it will rust underneath that dip. And if you re-dip year after year after year and it's not something you can see through to see what's going on, you could have issues when you really don't need to have issues. You know, I'm not a biggest fan of the dips when it comes on footholds. I like them when it comes to body grips or really sloppy traps, but that's just my personal opinion. Take that for whatever it's worth, because it's definitely not gospel. The other thing I want to talk about is paint. Good old fashioned, go to the hardware store, get you buy you 2 or 3 cases of spray paint when it's on sale, whatever color, and it doesn't matter what, it's under the dirt anyway if it's for a coyote. Clean the traps up, spray paint them. You can just boil them in the dye and spray paint them if you want to. You can just brush them off. If you've only got 2 or 3 dozen traps, I wouldn't even worry about boiling. I would just take a wire brush, knock the big stuff off, rinse it off, spray paint the traps. And that coating right there is going to be way more valuable over the long term than all the dyes or the dips is that spray paint. It can give you a color. If you're worried about odor, spray paint has got a chemical in it that is designed to evaporate extremely quickly. That's the complete opposite of a speed dip that's gas or water. The spray paint makes no difference to an animal. If you're worried that a coyote's not going to step in a trap that's spray painted, most of the best snare men that I've ever dealt with in the country, me included, and I'm not even saying I'm in that league, but me included with them, we spray paint most of our snares, and an animal has no trouble sticking his head in it. That means his nose has got to go through the loop with spray paint. So if it's spray paint under the ground on a trap, it's not going to make any difference. What makes that such a neat thing, if you do catch a coon and you're using spray paint and you've got a heated shop and you're really concerned about rust, you can just, if you in they shine one of them up on you or whatever, you can come in with a heated shop, you can spray paint it if you've got it about 60, 65 degrees, 70 degrees in there, and in 2 or 3 days you can take it right back out and use it. I've caught coyotes off traps that's been spray painted within 24 hours of me spray painting them. It doesn't really matter, but if you're concerned about the odor of the spray paint, just let it dry out. That chemical does exactly what it's supposed to do and makes all that go away. So that's kind of the spray paint. Spray paint to me lasts longer on anything. I think that's a much better, if there was a way that you could dip into spray paint with that chemical where it would work, and there may be somebody out there listening to this that knows how to do it, especially if you're into the car painting or something, that it would be really simple. You probably got a market there for something that you could sell a lot of. Just saying. Next thing I want to talk about is Full Metal Jacket. Now guys, everybody thinks I still own Full Metal Jacket. I have not owned Full Metal Jacket for probably 5 or 6 years now. F&T bought that from me. They bought the name, the product, my marketing, they bought everything from me for that product. There's still, last time I saw, Predator Control Group logo on that bottle. That's because of marketing. That's the reason that is still on there, because I did come up with that with the help of my dad that's in the chemical business with Full Metal Jacket. I built a market for it. When it got to the point where I'm having to deal with pallets of that stuff, my mail order business with me and my wife, that's not something that we're set up to handle. So I went and found someone that wanted it. F&T bought it. And if they sell one or a million jugs of that this year, it does not put one red penny in my pocket. So I just wanted to put that disclaimer out there, because there's a lot of people that still think that I own it, and I don't. Now, this is something I'm not sure exactly. I started using it about 2 years before I brought it to market. I use it on snares. I use it on dry land body grips, and I use it on all my footholds. I still do. What it is, basically, if you've never dealt with it, it's you don't mix it with water, you don't mix it with gasoline, you don't mix it with anything. You just pour it in a bucket, you take a dry trap, and you stick it in there, you count to like three, and you pull it out. If it's the first time you dip them, you let it set for a couple hours, you stick it back in there for a minute, a few seconds, count to five, whatever, pull it out, set it down. Tomorrow morning, you can go use that trap, as long as it's not, you know, below like 55, 60 degrees. If it is cold like that, you'll want to give it a few more days, let the hardener do what it's supposed to do. What Full Metal Jacket actually does to a trap, it's a polymer-based chemical. That chemical actually almost plastic coats the trap. So whatever's on the trap, you can't come off the trap. Water can't get into the trap. Odor can't come off the trap. So you basically took a piece of metal and dipped it in molten plastic and pulled it out and let it dry. That's kind of in a nut. That's what this product is. It's very thin. It is very tough. If you're gonna use it, you know, go to town with it. If you want to take it off every season for some crazy reason, you're going to have to use lye or your dishwasher or sand in a electric mixer or something like that to get it off. You just can't put it in gasoline. It's not going to come off after 1 year. It doesn't matter that it didn't come off, but some people, for some reason, they think they got to get their traps down to bare metal every single year to go use it. I have never, in about the 6 or 7 years I've been using Full Metal Jacket, never taken it off. If I need to take it off, or if I need to re-dip, it's because an animal, or many animals, took it off. That's the only reason I would take it off. I can take a trap in Full Metal Jacket and a lot of times get 3 years out of it before I start really having any concerns with rust. Because it's like I said, this stuff is tough. That's the reason I liked it so much. It's quick to use. It's clear. You know, if I've got a trap that's just got a little bit of surface rust on it and I need to use it, I don't even worry about painting it or dyeing it. I do think paint and Full Metal Jacket is the toughest combination you'll ever come up with through my own personal experience. But you... You don't even have to dye the trap to use this stuff or paint it. You can take a trap with just a little bit of surface rust on there, dip it straight in the Full Metal Jacket, and go trapping. And you may not even have any more rust on that trap for a year and a half to 2 years. Now, if you catch a bunch of raccoons, eventually they're going to be able to start stripping that stuff off of there. But it normally takes several raccoons and probably a dozen coyotes or better before they start getting that off enough to matter. And they hardly ever get it off the springs, which is what I'm concerned with more than anything, ever. And it's such a thin-coated product that you could put 50 or 60 coats on this and never catch an animal, and it's not going to impede anything on your trap. Because it's really thin, it's really hard, and it's really slick. So you don't have to worry about that, but that's what Full Metal Jacket is. Normally, if I'm dying traps in bulk like I'm getting ready to do, I'll dip them in Full Metal Jacket. I won't have to even think about those traps for a minimum of 2 years. If I'm doing painting, I'll dip them in the Full Metal Jacket. I've got some traps now that I know I've been using and catching coyotes with that are 4 years that don't have hardly any rust whatsoever on them between spray paint and full metal jacket. That's 4 years of working. To me, it's a time-saving thing. If I'm snares, if I dye the snares or paint the snares, I'm still dipping those in full metal jacket. I want to completely shut the oxygen off from getting down in between those individual pieces of cable, because cable rots from the inside out. So when I get a bunch of snares in, I'll just set them outside. When there's no more natural oil or grease on them, I can literally dip 50 to 75 dozen snares in an hour. And I can leave those snares, if I don't use them next year, I can take those snares out 3 years or 5 years from now, and they're going to be exactly like they were when I put them in the shed. Because there's no way that anything can get in there to let the moisture, because moisture needs oxygen. Full metal jacket, and I'm not making a commercial out of this, but I still get a lot of questions about this, because it's different and you hear all kind of nonsense and it's just Florax and this, that, and the other. You know, I use it on snares. The only way after my dog Daisy, the blackmouth cur, could ever be snared was when I started using full metal jacket. And she was apparently smelling the snares that I was using. I thought she was seeing them, she was smelling them. When I started dipping as test in full metal jackets, I started having to turn my dog loose 4 or 5 times an hour. So if you're into snaring, just is something to keep in mind. Now let's talk a little bit about wax. Wax is the old standby. I talked to a guy today from Illinois with something very interesting, which we'll talk about here in just a second. Wax, to me, I think it's, for the most part, it's a waste of energy and time, and I'll tell you why. One, wax absorbs any odor that's around it. That most perfume or lotions have wax in there. It's called perfumer's wax. And what a wax does is it absorbs anything that's around it. So if you've got wax traps and you're opening diesel or getting fuel or throwing animals in the back of your trucks, it's going to absorb the odors until it just can't absorb anymore, and then it's just going to be plumb funky. Now, if you keep them in a tote and you never touch them, you don't do anything, I think that's fine. Where I trap a lot, it gets hot, and heat and wax do not mix. It comes off the first time you catch an animal, so it's almost like a one-time use. It just doesn't seem very practical to me. But there's a lot of guys that live and die by wax. You know, God bless you for being that way. Me personally, I just think it's a waste of energy, because it doesn't stay on. It absorbs odor. In a lot of places, you know, when it gets 105 degrees down in Texas when I'm trapping down there for bobcats, if I've got wax traps, all the wax runs off the traps and pools on the bottom of my tubs. So it doesn't do me any good anyway. But that's just my personal opinion. And now there's several ways to use wax, and I've tried both ways. And if you're going to use wax and you've never really done it before, listen to what I'm saying. Do not put wax on top of water and then bring your traps up through there. You get a gobbed up, junked up, nasty looking trap that is the first time the jaws snap, or you get a fire where you misfire or something like that. Most of the wax is going to fly off of it. Wax is not going to adhere to a trap that's coming out of water very well. I know it's in magazines. I know people talk about it at demos. You hear about it on trapping forums. If you do it in the real world, it does not work very well, because water and wax do not mix. If you're going to use wax, you know, get you several pounds of wax. You can use resin or not. That's totally up to you. Most trappers' wax, you don't need it. You just put it over a fire, like a camp stove or a turkey fryer, like I'm using, whatever you want to use, and let that get warm where it melts. Do not let it get so hot that it starts smoking, because after the smoking part becomes the fire part, and putting out wax when it's on fire is almost near impossible. So you don't want to let it get to that point. If you see it starting to roll, turn the heat down, take it off the heat. But you just warm up that wax till it's liquid. You take a dry trap, There's a reason you can't run it through water and pull it up through wax. You take a dry trap, you set it down in the wax. Depending on how hot you got the wax, it may be 15, 20 seconds, it could be 5 seconds. You've got to let the metal of the wax, or the metal of the trap, become the same temperature as the metal of the wax. And luckily metal does that pretty quick. And then you pull it off and you let it drip off. Then you'll have a nice thin coat of wax that's not going to be all gobbed up and just big chunks and hunks hanging off of it everywhere. And then you've got something that's least nice to use, if you're going to use wax. Now, I had a friend that was in the USDA, and he told me about this. He wrote me a smart article when I was doing Longliner Times. And it was a cleaning barrel. And from the chemistry point of view, I have to admit that it really intrigued me. So I made one, and I used one for about 3 years. It becomes a mess. It becomes pretty stinky. But it does exactly what it's supposed to do. And if somebody is trapping, especially an ADC guy, is trapping all year long and he wants to have really nice looking traps all the time, what you do is you get a 55-gallon drum, fill it up about 3/4 with water, take a bunch of oak leaves and put down in the bottom of it. In the fall, you strip off a bunch of walnut hulls because it's very acidic. You could take some branches off a hemlock or a fir tree, strip the needles off, let that sit in there and soak. And what you're going to do is just basically put a lid on it and let it sit for about a year. And now what you're going to have after that year is going to be a black kind of stinking stuff. But it's going to be extremely, extremely acidic. And what a lot of old timers used to do is they had these barrels or pots. So when they would come off a trap line, if you get a skunky trap or you get some that get really rusted, you just drop, you know, you hook them up on a wire and you put them on the side of your 55-gallon drum. You let them sit down in that water, chain and all. You come back in about a week. When you pull them things out, I promise you, it's not going to smell like skunk and it's not going to be a bit of rust on that trap. It'll almost look brand spanking new because the acidity in there is eating the rust. So if you're doing ADC work on a continual basis all the time, that'd be a really neat thing to have. Or if you're running, you know, from October to May trapping, you can have one of these barrels. When you get traps that are getting in pretty bad shape, you know, you just wire a bunch of them up and set them off in that barrel for a week or so. When you pull them out, whatever you're going to choose to treat those traps, they're ready to go. You just rinse them off and do whatever you need to do. It's a really old school technique. It's a very low energy technique. I can tell you after about 3 years, you need to dump the thing because it'll start stinking so bad you don't want to be around it. But it will eat all that rust off that trap. And it doesn't seem to hurt the springs, and it doesn't seem to hurt the metal, but it will strip dye and wax and rust off of that trap. And because it's so low energy, it's just kind of a cool thing. And if you've never done it, it's just kind of a, you know, you ought to try it sometimes because it is pretty cool. Now, what I think is going to be the next, and I think it's going to take off pretty big one of these days, is powder coating of traps. Now, you can go to a powder coating shop, but unless you find one that's a little hungry and needs something to do, they're going to bend you over a barrel when they give you a price on this. I've got some body grip traps that the Red O'Hearn gave me, I bet it was 10 years ago. And he had them powder coated. And a body grip trap, it's not like stuff's chewing on it very much anyway. But that trap looks today, after like a decade, maybe 7 years, however long it was, exactly the way that it was when he handed it to me. The only place that ever gets any rust is where you have to scrape the powder coating off with a knife to get the dog to set on the free jaw of the trap. That's the only place. It looks exactly the same. So if you're running a bunch of body grip traps, think about how much time saving over 10 years and money and energy that'll take you. And if it costs you $5 a trap to get them powder coated, and you get all your body grip traps powder coated. And you don't have to deal with them with I don't know how long. 10 years, 15 years. You got to deal with them again. And then you break a cost analysis down over dealing with them every year and whatever your time is worth. Dude, you're coming way out ahead. Even if it was $10 a trap and you was going to run 100, that'd be $1,000. But break that down over 10 years, that'd be $100. It would be so super cheap, it'd be unbelievable. I do know guys that have powder coated long springs and had very good luck with them. I do know of a lot of trappers that have started powder coating their coyote traps and coil spring traps. I'm going to give you some advice though on the coil spring traps. When you take them to a shop that's going to give you powder coating and you're using a coil spring trap, I wouldn't try it with something like an MB650 or an MJ600 or something like that. But a standard coil spring trap that you can take a screwdriver and pop the springs out from the lever so there's no tension at all on the springs, let them powder coat it that way. They're going to have to run it through a sandblaster. They're going to charge it up with electricity. They're going to shoot the powder in there. It's going to connect. Everything's going to be good. When you get them back, pop the ends of your springs back up in your levers. And you've got something. I don't think it's going to last as long as a body grip trap will, because you're going to have coon, and coon will wear something out if you give them half a chance. But the guys that I'm talking about that have done this, they're hardly seeing any damage or rust on their traps after a full year of using them. So if you got 2 or 3 years out of them, and all you had to do at the end of the season was wash them off at the car wash, think how much enjoyable that's going to make your trapping. Now, if you're one of these guys that it's like a ritual to get a fire going and boil your traps and stuff like that, this ain't going to be for you. But if you're looking for efficiency, powder coating, I think, is going to be a wave of the future when it comes to traps. The only reason that I think it hadn't taken off yet is logistically, how do you get traps from trappers and back to trappers with shipping cost where it makes sense? But if you're in an area, you know, and you can get a smaller or learn how to build one of these things that powder coat with electricity and stuff like that, and you have a small sandblasting thing, I guarantee if you were somewhere like Pennsylvania or New York or even Ohio or Wisconsin or Minnesota, Iowa, places like that, and you built up a business, you could have probably a pretty good business just powder coating other trappers' traps. Because, one, I don't think it'd be a hard sell to the government with the USDA guys or state trappers either. Because it is such a tough product while it is on that trap. And it's such a smooth product when it's on the trap. And it's going to last so long. I really do believe somewhere in the future, we're already seeing it now with the Z-Trap when they're putting the powder coating on it. You know, some guys are saying that it comes off quick. Some are saying they're getting, you know, like a year, year and a half out of them before they got to do anything. Whatever, but you're dealing with one animal that's just horrendous on a piece of equipment. So powder coating, I think, is going to be, you know, really the key. Now, how do we go to snares? Like I said, if I'm doing a lot of them, like our fence snares down in Texas, I will dye those. And what I'll do is I'll put them in the dye. I'll get them really hot. I'll take them out of the dye. I'll let them completely cool off. This has got to be something chemical. It's the only way I figured out how to do this. And then once they completely cool off, I'll put them back in the dye. And then normally about 35, 40 minutes, I'll just come by and I'll just start raising a few up. There's a point on snares with brown trap dye that it doesn't get to really color it that well. And at that point, it looks kind of a greenish brown color. When I see that color, I pull all those snares out of the bucket. I can get, in my trough thing, I can get about 25 or 30 dozen snares at a time inside the trough. So, I mean, I can do 50 dozen snares in a half a day. So it's very efficient when I do that. Now, when I'm running trail snares for coyotes, instead of dyeing them all, because I'm not running as many of them. You know, if you're running big lines like they do in Canada on a, you know, a week-long check and stuff like that, and you're running, you know, several hundred bait stations, I'm not sure this would matter. But when I'm around here and I'm running 50, 60, 70 trail snares for coyotes, Okay, I may have a couple hundred snares that are dedicated just for that. I will spray paint those. I will set them outside until the shininess comes off of them and the oil is off of them. I will spray paint them in four or five different colors just so it's splotchy. You know, in different areas, you're going to be different colors. And then I'll let that dry for two or three days. I'll full metal jack them. I'll pull them out. When I dye the fence snares, though, I definitely put those in full metal jacket because I'm going to be allowing moisture and air and acidity that's going to stay inside that cable, and it will rust on the inside. But when I coat them in the full metal jacket, it's gone. If you're going to use the snares within 2 years, it didn't make any difference anyway. But, you know, just by the way the law of trapping is, if I take 50 snares to Texas and we burn through 25, there's going to be a couple of dozen of those that's going to be used next year but not catch, and then be used again and not catch. And eventually it'll catch just because of the run it's on or whatever. And if it's rotten, I'm going to be letting an animal go, and that does not make me a happy person. So that's the reason I put them in full metal jacket. Now, another thing at the end of the year, what do you do with all your baits and lures? Guys, a good commercially made bait or lure is not going to go bad in a year. A good commercially made lure and bait that's made by someone that actually takes pride in what they're making is not going to go bad in a decade. There's a few things you as the trapper can do to make a lure go bad, and it's really simple not to do. Ultraviolet light on a lot of organic products and essential oils will break those down, and it'll change the odor or you'll lose the odor. So the simple thing to do is put it somewhere where the sun can't reach them. The other thing that you need to do with your baits and lures is don't set them outside in a little wood building or a metal tin in those little garage things you can get at Lowe's where it gets 195 degrees in there in the summertime and just cooks. Because no matter what is being used as fixatives and stuff like that, if there's any organic matter, meat, glands, different things like that that's in that bait, and you cook it, and you cook it, and you cook it, you're going to change it. So if you want to have bait and lure that's going to last forever, just put it somewhere that's dark and cool. That's all you've got to do. And so if someone's running a sale on lure and you have more at the end of the year than you used, this means you don't have to buy as much next year. Just don't set them on the windowsill of a shop. Don't set them somewhere where they're going to cook. Just in the dark and somewhat as cool as you can. You know, if you've got a basement, if you've got an under part of a house, you can stick it in plastic totes. You could, whatever you want to do for the smell. But just keep the temperature somewhat consistent, you know, like below, 100 degrees, 60, 70 degrees, probably best. Keep it out of the sun and you don't have anything to worry about. Now urine, if you keep it in the dark and you keep it cool, it'll get really black looking and it'll build up a lot of ammonia. And if you open the jar, when you let it just sit out in the open like that, it's going to smell really, really strong of ammonia. And a lot of people think that's not good. That ammonia is a chemical that's coming off that urine. When you squirt that on the lip of a dirt hole or on a pea set or something like that, well, then about 3 or 4 minutes, that ammonia is burned off. So it doesn't really matter. It does have a lot stronger odor, People have different opinions on that. If you get urine and you like the way it is in the fall, the simplest thing to do with it is either stick it in an old refrigerator or better yet a freezer. Make sure you get plenty of head space so when it does expand, it doesn't break your container that you've got it in. And then when you thaw that out next fall, it'll be in the exact same shape and smell that it was when you put it in the freezer. If you don't want dark urine, then it's up to you not to let it get dark. If you buy good, clean, fresh urine and it's obvious that's what it is, you can keep it that way. Just keep it frozen. That's a pretty simple thing. Now, fish oils, the press stuff has a tendency to disappear. for whatever reason, from year to year. So if you're buying a cheaper fish oil, you know, try to use it up and buy new stuff at the end of the year. Because if you have just a standard fish oil on a shelf, when you order new stuff the next year, if you don't believe me, smell the new stuff, then smell the old stuff. A lot of the pressed stuff completely breaks down where it almost just smells like vegetable oil that has been rancid. You know, and you hardly can smell fish in it anymore. So if you're using fish oils, you could freeze it. I've never done that, but you could freeze it. But just try to use your fish oils up from year to year and just get fresh stuff, and you don't have to worry about it. Now, if you're dealing with true fish oil, stuff that is sun-rendered from fish over time, as long as you keep that stuff and it's not in a glass bottle in the sun, you're going to be okay. The only thing you got to worry about with really good oil, like the crawfish oil Norm's making, is you don't want to just like set it in a van somewhere where it's going to cook, and you just keep the ultraviolet. You'll see the commonalities here. You know, sun and heat break stuff down no matter what shape it's in. So don't do it. That's a really simple thing. Now, the last thing before we close today, I want to talk about the rest of your tools. And this is a money type part of the show. When you buy a sifter, you know, when you're dyeing your traps or you're dipping your traps or you're whatever in your traps, you're painting your traps, at the end of the year, just go ahead and put the sifter in there. If you're using like a high rolling hammer or sod buster or one of them groundhog things, it's a 3-in-1 tool. Instead of letting that get in bad shape, just go ahead and treat it like you would a trap. It's not going to take you hardly any more time. And now you've got something that's going to at least stop until you start to use it again in the next fall. So, you know, and that same goes for snare supports, tools, kill poles, everything else. Go ahead, clean it up. If it's showing rust, you know, knock the rust off and spray paint it or dye it or dip it or something. Because if you don't, if you were to run a budget sheet over your whole life of trapping, you'll find out most people don't make money trapping because they give it away when they don't have to. And if you get a good sifter like the Pro Sifter from F&T, which is based off of the one that I've been using for years, that is a quality sifter and it's not a cheap sifter. Why wouldn't you just take a minute to go ahead and drop that thing down in your dye barrel and dip it in Full Metal Jacket? And that way you'll probably get an extra. Your grandkids will be using that sifter. Not your kids, your grandkids. Why wouldn't you go ahead and do that? And a lot of people don't. When I'm running a lot of kill poles, and I'm using them a lot, I've got a piece of PVC pipe. I go down to Ace Hardware here in town, and I get some of the black or brown, if they can mix it. Some years, the guy didn't know how to do it, but... And I'll take this piece of PVC pipe that's about 5 foot long, and I will cap the bottom. I will fill that outdoor paint like you put on fence posts and fences and stuff, or basketball posts. And then I'll take a piece of wire, and I'll just individually dip those kill poles. It's protecting that number 9 wire. It's protecting that weld. It's keeping the pole in somewhat better shape. Now, when they dry out after 3 or 4 weeks, I can line them all along a fence, and I can hit them with 3 or 4 different colors of the spray can. They're camouflaged again, and they're no better wear than they were when I started the season. It's just a maintenance thing. It's very simple to do. Dog-proof traps. You know, the worst thing you can do with a dog-proof trap is throw them in the building and deal with them next fall. All that bait and lure and syrup and honey and molasses based stuff and everything that's going to be in there, that's going to turn into rock. Now you're going to have to take the time to scrape it out. It's going to be in all the crevices. It's going to be oozed up and stuck around your trigger bars. It's going to be everywhere, and it's a nightmare. So at the end of the season, you can take your dog proof traps, just get a big trash can, fill it up with water, set them all down in there, let it soak in that stuff, clean all that gunk out, pressure wash them or dye them with trap dye and boiling water. You can paint them then. You can Full Metal Jack them. You can wax them. and you can do whatever you want to do with them. But you're not letting it get to the point of disrepair, even though a dog-proof trap is a very simple mechanism for the most part. The springs on there, if you let them get really rusted and those rust pits start getting in that spring, it will weaken the trap and you will start losing raccoons. It's a simple thing. Even if I wasn't going to do anything to a dog-proof trap, I would at least brush off and spray paint the springs every fall or every spring when I was doing maintenance. Protect those springs. Everything else on that trap can take a lot of abuse. The springs will start getting weak and you'll start getting pullouts. Like I said, this is not the most sexiest show. It's not talking about how to catch anything, but it's just some things, because the way the internet is, and there's a lot of newer guys, it's only been in trapping for a year or so, and they get on a trapping forum, and one guy uses dyeing wax, another guy uses a speed dip, and, you know, by the time the forum thread gets over with, you know, they're cussing each other's mother and planning a knife fight over something as simple as what this is. So I just wanted to do a quick show explaining my thoughts and what I've learned and observed, because I've tried about everything, and if something new comes on the market, I'll probably try it too, just to see what it does and if it's better or worse, because I'm always looking for a better way. If I find a better way, I can throw away what I've been doing for the last 10 years in a nanosecond. Once it's proven to me that it is better, more efficient, allows me to catch more fur, it's game on with that product or whatever that is. So if you've never tried one of these other things, try them out. You may find out it's better what you're doing. If you don't treat your trapping that way, guys, I'm telling you one thing for sure. You're going to be doing the same thing that you've been doing for 20 years. You're going to be making about the same catch, because your system and your mindset of whatever it is now is not going to change. So why is the catch going to go up? Are you going to be spending as much time to do certain things when you can cut it in by half? Because the less time you deal piddling with traps, because all that is a tool to hold an animal, the more time you could be learning better techniques on traps. You could be getting more permission of places to set traps. You could be going out during the summer with your kids and stuff and scouting places to trap. The stuff that makes you more money, because it puts you on more animals. So don't be afraid to evolve. Evolution's not a bad thing, as long as it's not the Big Bang Theory, as far as I'm concerned, because you're either going to stay stagnant or you can go forward. And me personally, I like going forward. So whatever method you decide to use, try some of the other ones. You may find you like one better than another one. You may find out that one of these that I don't like personally may work better for you for a lot of different reasons. So just because I may not like the gas dips that much doesn't mean it's not the right thing for you. All right, guys. Well, I hope y'all learned something. I hope y'all had a good season. And I hope my northern brothers and sisters are actually getting some of this springtime weather by now. And I'll talk to y'all next week.
Rise and shine. 6 a.m. and your hand can't make it to the alarm clock before the voices in your head start telling you that it's too early, too dark, and too cold to get out of bed. Aching muscles lie still in rebellion, pretending not to hear your brain commanding them to move. A legion of voices are shouting their unanimous permission for you to hit the snooze button and go back to dreamland. But you didn't ask their opinion. The voice you've chosen to listen to is one of defiance. A voice that says there was a reason you set that alarm in the first place. So sit up, put your feet on the floor, and don't look back, because we've got work to do. Welcome to the grind. For what is each day but a series of conflicts between the right way and the easy way? 10,000 streams fan out like a river delta before you, each one promising the path of least resistance. Thing is, you're headed upstream. And when you make that choice, when you decide to turn your back on what's comfortable and safe and what some would call common sense, well, that's day one. From there, it only gets tougher. So just make sure this is something you want, because the easy way out will always be there, ready to wash you away. All you have to do is pick up your feet. But you aren't going to, are you? With each step comes the decision to take another. You're on your way now, but this is no time to dwell on how far you've come. You're in a fight against an opponent you can't see, but oh, you can feel him on your heels, can't you? Feel him breathing down your neck. You know what that is? That's you. Your fears, your doubts, and insecurities all lined up like a firing squad, ready to shoot you out of the sky. But don't lose heart. While they're not easily defeated, they are far from invincible. Remember, this is the grind. The battle royale between you and your mind, your body, and the devil on your shoulder is telling you that this is just a game. This is just a waste of time. Your opponents are stronger than you. Drown out the voice of uncertainty with the sound of your own heartbeat. Burn away your self-doubt with a fire lit beneath you. Remember what we're fighting for and never forget that momentum is a cruel mistress. She can turn on a dime or the smallest mistake. She is ever searching for the weak place in your armor, that one tiny thing you forgot to prepare for. So as long as the devil is hiding the details, the question remains, is that all you got? Are you sure? And when the answer is yes, when you've done all you can to prepare yourself for battle, then it's time to go forth and boldly face your enemy, the enemy within. Only now you must take that fight into the open, into hostile territory. You're a lion in a field of lions, all hunting the same elusive prey with a desperate starvation that says victory is the only thing that can keep you alive. So believe that voice that says you can run a little faster and you can throw a little harder, and that for you, the laws of physics are merely a suggestion. Luck is the last dying wish of those who want to believe that winning can happen by accident. Sweat, on the other hand, is for those who know it's a choice. So decide now, because destiny waits for no man. And when your time comes and a thousand different voices are trying to tell you you're not ready for it, listen instead to that lone voice of dissent. The one that says you are ready. You are prepared. It's all up to you now. So rise and shine.